Places. Everyone.
We're now broadcasting.
Roll the tape in. 3, 2.
A new audio drama.
Appaloosa Radio is where stories come alive.
Real audio drama.
Appaloosa Radio offers an original audio story, The Ride.
The yellow electrical contractor's truck turns slowly into the senior adults only mobile home park. Past the four swimming pools, the jacuzzi, the workout gym, the extraordinary crafts room, and the private movie theater. It followed the circular road to Space 77C, where it stopped in front of a triple-wide, super deluxe unit. James' father had spared no expense buying a top-of-the-line manufactured home. He would become intensely angry if anyone ever called it a trailer. Sure, it still had wheels buried beneath the unit's undercarriage, but that was just because California law did not permit their removal. It would never be moved. It was as permanent as any Southern California tract home. It was 2 o'clock in the morning, so James did not honk his horn. Instead, he flashed his lights and a figure emerged from his mother's screened veranda. He was astonished to see his older brother wearing a suit coat. Didn't he realize that they were heading to a construction site in the middle of the Mojave Desert? Tomar did wear blue jeans, but then, his shoes were expensive Italian loafers. Bet, he bought them in New York at an exclusive shop. Probably at least 150. The philosophy professor opened the truck's door and greeted his younger brother.
This is an ungodly hour. Barely got to sleep when the alarm went off.
I'm sorry, but it is 3.5 hours if the freeways are all clear. I did bring a thermos of coffee. Do you want a cup?
Yeah, sure. Do you have any sweetener?
Your wish is my command. I always keep a box of sugar cubes in my truck. Unfortunately, working where up I'm working means drinking lots of really bad coffee. You ready?
Yes, let's do it.
When I offered my truck to you, I forgot to ask whether you can drive a stick.
Yeah. Dad taught me to drive using a car with a stick shift. One of the worst things he did to me was making me drive the hills of San Francisco. Find the spot. Then, release it slowly, gently. At the same time, ease on the gas. Of course, when I messed up, he would always yell at me.
When I came along, he was too busy with the business to teach me. He hired a driving school. All their cars were automatic. But when I was in Vietnam with the Marines, I had to drive this massive diesel truck up to Danan. Two clutches and six gears. Believe me, brother, I had to do a lot of gear grinding.
This looks like a four-wheel drive.
I need it for the desert. I also have a winch on the front. Had to use it a couple of times to get out of ditches.
You seem to enjoy this rugged outdoor adventure stuff.
I love living close to the beach. Sometimes, I can even sneak in some surfing. But working out in the desert is a real challenge. And you're right, I enjoy challenges.
They left Huntington Beach and caught the northbound 605 freeway. Traffic was light, and for some time they traveled in silence.
So, older brother, how is the philosophy business these days?
James, it's not a business. It's a pursuit of truth and wisdom.
Yeah. So, how's that working out for you?
Well, let's just say I've made some mistakes along the way.
Mistakes? Like what?
Like getting involved with a married woman, for starters.
I am not sure Socrates would approve.
Well, as a historical fact, Socrates seduced more than his fair share. However, it was never women. He preferred young, athletic males.
So, tell me about this married woman. What attracted you to her?
Well, the story gets even more viscous.
Is that some kind of disease?
No, I meant the situation is even more sticky.
You mean like quicksand? You're trapped and can't get out.
Janelle is the wife of another faculty member, a professor in the mathematics department, a real nerd.
So, she became bored with the math guy and, instead, found you incredibly more exciting.
You're right. She seduced me. I did not seduce her.
Come on. I want more of the details.
She is a dental hygienist in my dentist's office.
Wait a minute. This brilliant math guy married a dental hygienist. Then, she starts craving your body while she's cleaning your teeth.
You make it sound so crass. After my appointment, she asked me if I would like to meet her for a drink.
You mean like a Pepsi or a Coke? I thought liquor is still illegal in North Carolina. That's why they have all those bootleggers and their fast cars.
I understand the insult. No. We had cocktails at a very nice restaurant. Then a week later, we went for a picnic next to a waterfall. That's where we consummated our relationship.
Where was the husband while you were consummating?
He was delivering a paper at a professional mathematics conference.
Tell me more about her.
She is a little overweight, very high energy, and has an incredible laugh.
And a beautiful smile.
You're teasing again. Anyway. Her husband found out and then went directly to Carrie. Carrie is filing for divorce and has taken Newton up to Pennsylvania to live with her parents. And my university has brought me up on morals charges, threatening to remove my faculty tenure.
Sounds like an avalanche that won't stop sliding. Thank you.
reached the 91 freeway, where they turned east toward Corona and Riverside.
How is Mom holding up?
Not good. Not good at all. She is drinking like a fish. She can barely get up out of bed. She does not eat. She doesn't talk. She doesn't seem to care about anything.
Before you got here, I was thinking that she is looking bad. It is really hard to see her like this. She was the dynamo, the go-getter, the unstoppable one.
Yeah, but she has always had a drinking problem. Dad was half Portuguese and could drink morning, noon, night, and then at midnight again and have no effects. Mom, on the other hand, drank less but had more problems. Now I think she is an alcoholic. I think she needs treatment.
She was always so strong. So full of love.
Was strong. Was full of love. Used to be the one who sustains everybody else. But that is used to be. It is no longer true. She has become dependent on the bottle. Or more accurately, bottles. I know that the day before yesterday she consumed 3 full bottles of gin.
Not good. There seems to be no spark left. Now she's lost her soulmate. Dad was everything to her. I've seen the letters that she wrote to him during the war. She really loved him.
A hard man to love, cantankerous, yelling when anything went wrong, cussed like a sailor.
Which, of course, he was.
Yeah, I had forgotten. Still, a great businessman. Took that little print shop and made it into a real moneymaker.
But still a real SOB. It was Mom who made things turn out right when he messed things up with his anger. She was the fixer. Smoothed everything out.
In June 1979, there was no direct route from Los Angeles to Mojave. The then preferred route was to go east and then go north on the 395. James and his brother Tomar eased from the 91 freeway over to the 10. Then in San Bernardino, they joined the 395. It was no longer dark. The first vestiges of sunlight squeezed between the mountains.
Brother, there is a question I have been wondering about for a long time. When we were growing up, you were Tommy. Then in high school, you became Tomar. I never understood why.
Well, I was still Tommy Hinton while I was in ninth grade. But I was not an athlete. I felt like a total klutz. Even when I played Little League, all I ever did was sit on the bench and yell, "Hey, batter." I was this short, skinny kid who got good grades, but who no one liked. Especially girls. I asked 6 different girls to go to the freshman fling with me. All of them said no. Then over the summer, I decided to change my name.
Where did Tomar come from?
Just a name I made up. Never knew anyone with that name. Anyway, as Tomar, I had status. Everyone thought I was a foreign exchange student, or maybe someone who had recently migrated to the US. One of my teachers even complimented me for learning to speak English so quickly. I never told anyone where I was supposed to be from. Kinda hinted that it was somewhere in the Middle East. Anyway, after I became Tomar, things changed. I asked 3 girls to go to a dance with me, and all 3 accepted.
That must have been a problem.
No, it wasn't. I took all 3 of them. Told them I was used to having a beautiful harem.
They bought that line.
Yes, they did. The 4 of us had a great time, and we remained friends all through high school. Then I joined the debate squad and found my niche. I won 28 trophies in my 3 years. Then I went to UCLA, and again being Tomar was useful, especially in those gigantic lower division classes. I always made a point of going up after a lecture in those huge classes and asking the professor questions. Being Tomar who asked interesting questions got me letters of recommendation from some really important professors. I was given a full-ride fellowship for my PhD.
You said that you weren't an athlete, but I remember you beating me in tennis. Lots of times. I was always giving it everything I had, and yet you kept beating me. Beating me pretty easily.
I was never good enough to make the tennis team.
But, Wise's older brother, Huntington Beach High, had one of the best tennis teams in the state. Several members of that team became professionals and one even played at Wimbledon.
Yes, I knew her. She played at Wimbledon in 1972 in doubles. They even made it to the quarterfinals. When I tried out for the team, she was our top player. But she was also the one who told me to find another sport. Tennis was not for me.
That was a rude thing to say. I think you are a much better athlete than you give yourself credit for. Okay, Wimbledon is out, but in a rec league, you'd be pretty good.
I wish I had heard that from someone in high school. I gave up the sport. Have not played since.
Maybe, wise older brother, it is time to play it again.
Just maybe.
On Highway 395, California's Mojave Desert spreads out endlessly. There were a lot of southbound trucks flashing their bright lights, and the two-lane road required considerable attention. For some time, there was no conversation in the contractor's truck.
I have another personal question, if you don't mind.
We're brothers. Personal questions are permitted.
So, you are a professor of philosophy at a private university in North Carolina. What is your salary?
I'm paid $31,000 a year. For that, I must teach 5 courses a year. Only one can be at the graduate level where the classes are extremely small. The others are larger, probably about 40 students in each.
Last year, Dad netted 4 times that from his printing business. He paid his manager what you're being paid, and the manager does 90% of the actual work.
Quite a difference. I did not realize that Bart is getting paid what I am now earning. So,
here's another personal question. If this morals thing holds up, what's going to happen?
They would revoke my tenure, and most likely they would seek to fire me. The university's board of trustees are all very conservative Baptist types. I don't think the board was happy at the essays I wrote in opposition to the war in Vietnam. Not many pacifists in North Carolina.
I have a suggestion. Take it for what it may be worth. If the morals thing costs you your tenured position at the university, why not come back here and run the printing business? You could settle at the beach, surf, or maybe get a boat. Take nice trips. Eat at good restaurants. Enjoy the good California life.
Having a sailboat would be intriguing. I did some sailing on the Chesapeake Bay with some friends a couple of summers ago.
I never went to college, but I remember that there is a philosopher who said the purpose in life is to achieve happiness.
I think you are talking about Epicurus. He taught that the goal of human life is to achieve happiness, which consists of peace and freedom from fear and the absence of pain. He also taught that people should live self-sufficient lives surrounded by close friends. The gods, he said, were too busy doing other things to care about human affairs.
Sounds good to me. I gave up thinking the gods cared about me in Vietnam.
It was nearly 5:30 when they pulled into the parking lot for the High Desert Truckers Cafe where James had told his crew to gather. As the contractor, he was responsible for their lodging and meals while they were on the build site, and the High Desert Truckers Cafe was the only establishment within miles. James had arranged for a portable dormitory to be brought in and parked at the backside of the cafe's parking lot. Next to it, he also brought in a small portable office with a dedicated phone line. Towering above the cafe were the rugged San Geronimo Mountains, many of which reached over 8,000 feet. It is on these peaks that the international company had decided to build its wind farm. Eventually, there would be 60 windmills, each nearly 90 feet high with a very large propeller. The project was now in phase 2, the second group of 15 windmills.
I didn't realize how isolated this place was when I initially bid on the job. This cafe is the only place I could put the dormitory and the office. Fortunately, Hutch has been great to work with. Every 2 weeks, I hand him a big check and he's happy. He could really gouge me on meals, but he doesn't. I'm thinking that he keeps the meal prices low, so he can sell more beer. I've told my guys that I won't pay for their beer. So, Hutch sells them beers, charging $2.50 for a beer that should just cost a buck. But it is their choice. They don't have to drink.
How do you do it, James? How do you work in this godforsaken place?
It's not so bad once you get used to it. It gets hot in the summer and pretty darn cold in the winter, but we adjust.
James led his older brother to a far corner of the gravel parking lot behind the High Desert Truckers Cafe.
Look up here and you can see one of the windmills. It is atop a mountain that is 7,900 feet high. To get to it from here, you have to drive up a very rutted road that we cut out of the mountain. It takes us nearly an hour of solid climbing. We use what I call our Windmill Express. An old Chevy Suburban that seats 10 and which is geared really low. We load it up in the morning, 6 electricians, our tools, and me. Then, in the evening, we drive it down to the cafe.
From here it looks like a monstrous insect devouring everything it encounters.
I think our windmills are pretty darn impressive. 90 feet tall. Huge propeller. Making lots of clean energy.
Clean energy? Is that what you call it? I call it a blight on the landscape. A bunch of metal monsters spinning in the wind.
Spinning in the wind. That's the idea. Spin and make electricity. Send the electricity down the grid to power our towns and cities. Stop burning petroleum from countries we don't like and who don't like us. Tomar. My brother, I look up and I see freedom.
Okay, your opinion. You said you wanted me to come in and meet your guys. Besides, I'm getting hungry.
The two Hinton brothers enter the High Desert Truckers Cafe where James' crew had gathered. They were a rough and rowdy group. Tomar immediately realized that work crews in the Mojave Desert do not wear suits and handcrafted Italian loafers. He had a quick cup of coffee and a sweet roll and then made his exit. After Tomar had left the cafe and had started the construction truck for the drive back to the coast, one of the electricians commented, "You and your brother couldn't be more different." James simply nodded and gulped a yep. Tomar climbed into the large four-wheel drive truck, adjusted the seat and the outside mirrors, and started the engine. In a few miles, shifting gears felt natural and he did it easily without thought. In Adelanto, he stopped for gas and a mid-morning breakfast. Realizing that his suit coat did not fit the setting, he left it in the cab. In the restaurant, he sat alone. His thoughts drifted to Jane L. It seemed real, genuine. But it wasn't. She called it love, but it was more accurately passion. Her passions had ruined his previous life. She did not love him. She used him to satisfy her passions. He felt the victim. Did she really love him? Of course not. Would she do something similar again with someone else? Unquestionably, yes. Then, on a whim, he stopped his musing and asked the friendly middle-aged waitress a question.
Excuse me, but may I ask you a question?
Sure, honey. You are the customer. My job is to make you happy.
Have you ever been in love?
Sure, honey, but all it got me was a baby bump.
Tomar smiled politely, finished his late morning breakfast, and left a generous tip. He got back in his brother's truck and drove away, his mind wandering back to his magnum opus, an article he had published in a prestigious philosophical journal titled Tortoise Structural Morality. The article was a chapter from his PhD dissertation at UCLA. And it had earned him acclaim and recognition. It was widely praised and often quoted. He was even invited to deliver the keynote address at several conferences.
he was viewed by many as a rising star in philosophy. Still, that article was published 9 years ago. For the past 2 years, he had been trying to expand the article into a book, but he was stuck, unable to advance his argument. In his book, he wanted to argue that a universal human desire to love one another was the foundation of all morality. But his own recent experiences had shattered his belief in his own thesis. Love for Jane L. was a weapon to manipulate and exploit others. It did not represent respect or appreciation for their dignity or value. No, love was only a means to satisfy her own selfish desires. And, as the cynical waitress had bluntly pointed out, love often came with unwanted and unexpected consequences. Professor Tomar Hinton now questioned the validity of his own theory. Structural Morality, the book, was a dead end. It was a flawed project based on a false premise. As he drove back to his mother's spacious mobile home, Tomar realized that he was no longer the brilliant and original young thinker. He was now a disillusioned and insecure middle-aged professor. The pursuit of truth and wisdom had led him astray into a dark and dense forest. He was, in a word, lost.
Oh my. I am so glad that you finally returned. They had to take your mother away in an ambulance to the hospital. She was unconscious. They now say she's in a coma.
I had to drive my brother up to the Mojave. I needed his truck to make the funeral arrangements for my dad.
At the hospital, he found his mother in a private room. The only sound came from the several monitors she was attached to. She also had a variety of tubes in her. He walked next to her bed, kissed her, but she was not responsive. He touched her. She felt cold. A nurse came in, checked the various monitors, and then spoke.
She has been unresponsive since she was admitted. It's an aneurysm. Blood clotting in the arteries to the brain. We're finding no response to any of the tactical stimuli. We're going to do an ECG to determine whether there is any brain activity. I am afraid that the situation does not look good.
I'll stay until after you finish your tests.
There is a cafeteria on the second floor if you'd like something to eat.
Thank you, but I don't really feel like eating now.
Balboa Bay lies between the Newport Beach Strand and Corona Del Mar. In the bay is the posh Balboa Island. Balboa Bay is just over 2 miles from the hospital where Marta Hinton remained in her coma. Tomar drove his brother's truck to the tip of the Newport Strand, to where the surfers call the Wedge. There is no more gnarly place for Southern California surfers. However, when Tomar ventured down there in the early evening, the break had fallen to just inches and the surf crowd had gone elsewhere. He could see the old car ferry crossing between Newport and Balboa Island, and he watched it go to and from the island several times. Then, he sat on a bench and watched the parade of pleasure craft return home after a day on the Pacific. The sailboats especially fascinated him. There was one that he judged to be over 50 feet long. A genuine beauty. Two masts and a mizzen. Dual of en-route outboards pushed the boat gently into the harbor. The people aboard it waved enthusiastically at him. Happy, sunburned masters of the ocean. The ECG had confirmed what Tomar already knew. There was no discernible brain activity in Mrs. Marta Hinton. Soon both of his parents would be dead.
he knew that he had to drive back to Mojave and tell his brother James. There was no phone service up the mountain on which the Hinton electrical crew worked. Someone would drive a vehicle down to the portable office headquarters, pick up the message, and then drive back up. Better, Tomar decided, for me to go. Besides, he was now an expert in driving a four-wheel drive contractor's truck. He had to go because he now knew that his younger brother was the closest friend that he now had. He had to go because James would be the first to know that he was leaving the university and returning to California to operate the family's printing business. As he drove, he looked up at the massive stars above him in the desert sky and remembered an old philosopher's story. Thales, one of the ancient seven sages, was so preoccupied studying the stars that one night he fell into a well and had to be pulled out. So fixated on profundity that he could not navigate mundane reality. Tomar understood. For one so supposedly smart, he had been incredibly stupid. He vowed to never again be Thales.
Appaloosa Springs Audio Theater is a creative collaboration whose purpose is to write, produce, and share original story content through webcast radio experiences.